the Rule of Threes Podcast. The Rule of Threes Podcast. It's the Rule of Threes Podcast with Chris and Casey.
What's up, everybody? This is the Rule of Threes Podcast. I'm Casey Lawrence.
I'm Chris Grace from Sydney, Australia.
Yeah, and oh lordy lord, what a game five.
Oh man, what a game five. What a game five of the NBA Finals. Casey, I can't tell you anything about this game. I can't tell you what my thoughts are about this game. I'm so hyped from what happened.
Okay, I just have to say it. I thought it was done. I thought they were completely done. I thought Toronto had killed them. Toronto was up six with a minute and a half to go. And then they just didn't score again. And Golden State came back and won. It was magnificent to see them come back and just be like, fuck it, we're not losing this game. We are not losing this game. And that's not even to count all of the rest of the ridiculous shit that happened in that game.
I mean, like, you know, like, I can't even pick one moment from this game, Casey, that I feel was really the best moment.
I'm just going to go quarter by quarter and you can tell me what you loved about each quarter. I think we should stop messing. I think we should stop messing with the people. Chris, you have been unable to watch the game because of the hard time you have in Australia catching a basketball game.
Well, first, I've been very, I think I mentioned this last time, I'm surprised by how completely indifferent at least Sydney, Australia is. Maybe other parts of Australia care, but how it just totally indifferent to the NBA this entire city is.
Yeah.
So the ability to watch it live somewhere is very small. And then I thought, I don't know, I thought it would be on television. It's on paid television, but I don't have that in my hotel room.
Have paid television in your hotel room?
I mean, I don't have, you know, like premium. It's not even premium. I guess it's some kind of paid cable package that I would need from the equivalent of Fox Sports to watch the NBA game. So it's not on regular broadcast television here. And then my YouTube TV does not work here. I get, you know what? Now that I think about it, I could have VPN'd. I'll try to VPN for game six.
Great.
And then,
good idea.
NBA.com does not work. My account does not work out here. I might've had to have like an Australia account or something, but I wasn't going to pay like $50 again just to watch this game.
It is very hard for our NBA fans abroad to follow the league. It's not an easy league to follow. Are you familiar with Mark Deeks?
No, I'm not.
He's a guy who used to write under the name Sham Sports, and he's basically like the analytics sports guy from England. And so he used to have a website that kept all the team's salaries, and he would do a comprehensive list of like who's who in the free agent list and like of people that you were like, oh my God, I've never even heard of this guy.
And was he a guy that was like, I'm having trouble like watching games from England?
Yes. Oh yeah. I mean, he'd have to stay up until the crack of midnight and games were not on, you know, and the international league pass, it is better now than it used to be, but it is still not great. And league pass is worthless during the playoffs.
Right. I'm totally okay with the, I have to get up at 10 a.m. in the morning here to watch a game. I actually don't mind that at all. I think that's kind of cool. It's kind of fun to have a game sort of be over and then be like, oh, I got the rest of my day. Even, you know, you and I are, we have a luxury of living in L.A. because we have sort of a smaller version of that. At least, you know.
Yes, we do.
If a Raptors fan is watching a Warriors game in Oakland, then they're staying up pretty late.
Yeah. Yeah. it's like, it is midnight now, on the East Coast. The difference is very stark because basketball fans on the West Coast don't have to worry about that. And this is a medium, game. Like normal games in LA during the regular season, they start at 7, they end at 10. That's 1 o'clock on the East Coast. It's hard to follow the league because of the time differences.
Right. Now it's Monday there. So they started, what time do they start the game? your time.
Game started at 6 p.m. Pacific time.
Okay. Which on a non-holiday day is not really a great time to start for ratings purposes.
No, it's not. I mean, ratings are always going to be a little deflated in this series because the ratings that they collect for Toronto don't count towards the ratings, right? So everybody who watches in Canada doesn't count towards the ratings here. So the ratings for this series are going to be like some of the lowest finals ratings in forever. But that doesn't count all the people in Canada who are watching.
Now, I will say that yesterday was a holiday here in Australia. I'm sure that, Casey, you observed it as well.
I yesterday did. It was Boxing Kangaroo Day.
Yes. You know what? I actually did see, we went to a zoo yesterday and I did see a kangaroo in person.
Great.
But no, yesterday was the Queen's birthday.
Our zoo. Oh, the Queen's birthday. Like the British Queen?
I believe so, because it's technically this is still part of the Commonwealth or something. I don't know.
it's so interesting to me that for her birthday, she basically celebrated by hanging out with Donald Trump.
Yeah. What a birthday present.
What a fucking birthday present.
I ended up following the third and fourth quarters of this game, just refreshing Yahoo Sports game stream and... Yeah. Looking at Twitter. That was basically all I did. I checked in early in the game when Kevin Durant had started the game. The next thing I saw was Kevin Durant exits game, Toronto Raptors fan clap for his injury.
Yes.
And then I watched basically Yahoo game stream for the rest of it. So I know what happened, but I have no visceral sense of like what actually it felt like.
Let me run you through it. Okay, in the first quarter, it felt like neither team could miss from the three-point line. Well, okay, sorry. It felt like the Warriors couldn't miss from the three-point line and that the Raptors were getting whatever they wanted down low. The Raptors did not shoot well from three-point land basically up until the fourth quarter when they shot pretty well from three-point land. But it was it was so fun to see Kevin Durant out there and have this version of the Warriors team that's like, oh, yeah, these guys, the guys that you can't guard because there's three sharpshooters and two incredibly good passers. It was fun to watch and they played really well. And then the best part about it was the Raptors weren't even out of it. They played very well in the first quarter as well. So it was a really competitive, fun first quarter. I think that first quarter is basically what the finals should have been if there weren't injuries.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of talk in the first quarter about the fact that Looney and Bogut were the first two bigs off the bench and that DeMarcus Cousins didn't get to play at all. And so there were shots of DeMarcus Cousins on the bench and Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson talked about how, you know, he's got to be prepared to get in there. But, you know, if you're not playing well, you know, you're not playing well. But, like, then, all of a sudden, Kevin Durant tries to do a move on Serge Ibaka and just immediately goes down. He knows. And I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, but people were showing an extreme close-up of his calf when the injury happened.
Yes, I did see that.
You did see that. Man, that is fucking gross. It is gross. You can absolutely see his calf muscle just fucking pop.
Yeah.
And I cringed when I saw that.
What is your feeling about the injury and the Raptors fans' reaction to it?
There was one guy I saw who was like taunting him. One guy in the picture who was taunting him. Then as soon as all the Raptors players were like, "Don't fucking do that," everybody calmed down and cheered him. It's a bad look. It's an absolutely bad look. So I don't have anything good to say about the people who cheered him. But there were also people there who were just shocked. Were like, oh my God. Like, there's another guy in that same frame of that replay who was like, oh my God, what happened? So I am, you know, in the heat of the moment, you have a reaction. And you can choose to not be proud of that reaction. And if I was Toronto, I would not be proud of their heat of the moment reaction. But to come back and cheer him as he walked off the court, you know, you have to do that to make up for it.
Yeah. I mean, the cheering when he walks off the court is sort of standard, though. Like, If you watch the replay of when he's sort of sitting there and waving for help, they are, it's not just the one guy. Like, there's a pretty audible, it's a pretty loud reaction that's, you know, enjoying the fact that he was injured until he stands up and until the players wave at them. And then it sort of turns into like tepid, proper, polite applause. But there's it's not like, if you watch that clip again, it's like, it's not just like five guys like taunting him or whatever. It's a significant portion of the lower bowl. Yeah. Damn. The lower bowl is really like clapping for it. I think it's a hilarious heel turn in this series. I think that I would say the Raptors are probably still going to win the series, especially because Durant's probably out for the series now.
There's no way he's coming back.
So it's kind of a hilarious heel turn because everybody's like so happy for the Raptors for them to win. But now it is a little bit like, yeah, you're winning, but it's kind of because Durant's not in the series. And I wonder if it creates this end game that everybody except you and I probably just didn't really want to have happen, which is, I bet Durant just resigns and is just like, let's go. Like, you guys were so, everybody in the league was so happy when you beat us without me. I'm just going to resign and we're just going to like win the next three.
Well, what if he's injured and it's bad now? What if it's an actual Achilles tear, right? And instead of just like opting out, he just opts in on his player option. I mean, that's why you get the 1+1 is in case of a catastrophic injury. I want to sign a 1-year deal, but I want to have flexibility for a little bit if I get injured. There's a chance that he just is a dead salary next year and then leaves anyways. I mean, we really just can't speculate about what the fuck he's going to do. But it would line up so perfectly if he came back because they lost. That would be such a thing.
I mean, that's kind of what I remember when LeBron and them beat them the year before he joined. And I remember thinking that, like, cool, LeBron won this series, and by doing so has basically locked himself out of the next three because Durant joined them. And in a way, it's like if the Warriors give up this 1 year, when really no one can really even argue that they have, it's hard to even argue that they've failed in this series. Like, it's like they're just not the team that they had a month ago. So they could potentially like basically like lose this series and be back in the finals next year with Curry, Durant, and Thompson again, and like whatever their pieces, and Draymond and Iguodala if he doesn't retire, and like, you know, add some pieces or whatever. They could be back dominating again with Durant on a 1 year. Maybe he takes the entire regular season to rehab.
He certainly could. I mean, you know, you put him on the boogie plan, you know, and the boogie plan was he comes back when he comes back. The only bummer is that, you know, if it's an Achilles, the recovery time on that is about 12 months. And Boogie was back in, you know, 9. But he was very lucky, and he still wasn't at 100%. So I don't think you're going to get 100% Kevin Durant next year if it's an injury, as you know, in that level of capacity. Because that would be you know, just such a bummer. And I kind of feel like I jinxed him. I'm wearing his jersey. I wore his jersey today, and I was wearing it out, and people talked to me about it. I went to the supermarket, and people were like talking to me about Oklahoma City, and a guy talked to me about Durant. I went to go see Dark Phoenix today, and the ticket taker, we talked about basketball for 3 minutes. I was late to the movie because I was talking about basketball, and I feel like I did this. Like, you know, I don't want to put, you know, so much importance on my fandom, but like, I cursed him because I wore his Oklahoma City jersey today.
I think you might have cursed him by going to see Dark Phoenix.
Oh yeah, you're probably right about that.
Because in essence, he had like a Dark Phoenix return to his career. Like, he tried to come back.
He certainly did. There was an explosion in space. And that space was his calf. Oh, boy.
Yeah. I think that it's funny. In terms of narrative, it's almost all resolved in a perfect way for him to come back. Because I think that I think it's very clear. Everybody that was like, they're better without him, is wrong. Which was apparent before anyone said that, but like people were just during the Trailblazers series, people were sort of edging towards that assumption. They're probably not going to win. So he's got unfinished business in terms of coming back. Like there's just really no, and what you said about the 1-1 really makes sense. It's just like, you've got this player option, just opt in and like, don't go on the long, weird now with the injury, particularly strange free agent tour of lots of teams having to figure out how much they actually value you, even though, you know, they're probably going to all offer him as much as they can.
He'd get a max no matter where he went, even if he didn't play next year. That's the wild thing.
Yeah. But I think it just muddies up that narrative of the free agent tour if he's going around with an injury. Whereas if he just opts into the 1 year, it's like, yeah, we'll just do, let's do this next year. Like, let me use this contract for what it's designed for and come back, try to get a ring next year. And then you can sort of rerun the same narrative next year of like, okay, I did what I came to accomplish.
Yeah.
The only thing that potentially messes that up is if they come back and win the series. then it's really interesting, because then it's like, oh, they don't really need you.
Yeah.
But from all accounts, it seems unlikely that they're going to come back to win this.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem unlikely, but there's still two games to play, baby. Thursday night, I think it's going to be Friday morning for you, and then Sunday night, I think Monday morning for you. Lot of time off, lot of time to get back to Oracle for the Warriors to kind of rest up and see if Looney can kind of feel a little better. And they have to play lights out to win. I mean, this Toronto team is for real. There's no doubting that.
Yeah.
But if they, I mean, I did you see who missed the last shot of the game tonight?
I saw on the stats. Was it blocked by Draymond?
It was not blocked.
Okay. It's listed as blocked in the Yahoo game stream, but it was Kyle Lowry taking a three-pointer, yes, when they were down by one.
Yeah. Okay. If it was blocked, it didn't look like it was blocked to me live. It could have definitely been blocked because it hit out of bounds. It was not even close, okay, in the least.
Okay, my question for you is, not having, yes, watched that last play, why were they going for a three-pointer?
They doubled Kawhi and tried to swing the ball around, and then there just wasn't any time left because they started so late in the clock. Golden State had a foul to give, so they had a lot of tactical advantage on if they were to try to drive, because any drive, right, that they do, any play that they run is just going to get fouled, and then they have to start it over again with that much little time left. So a three-pointer, right, might have been the best kind of shot they were going to get at that point.
First of all, a great kudos to YouTube channels like House of Highlights and Free Dawkins, because I am now able to watch the last couple plays here. I just watched Draymond do an over and back violation.
That was absolutely crazy. It was crazy, yeah, that he did it. And even crazier that after that, and then after Cousins goaltend and then offensive foul, that they still won the fucking game. That was, yeah, so wild to me.
I saw Cousins come up with quite a few goaltends, at least two, in the game stream. That's kind of like, I will say this,
one of them was close.
Yeah.
The defensive one, I'm not close at all.
I think this Curry, is it a Cousins offense? It was listed as a Curry offensive foul, but it looks like clearly it should be a Cousins offensive foul right after that.
It should have
on
been
this hard pick on, but yes, even that I have to say is kind of touchy, that for the last minute of a finals game, that's not that, that's an unusual call. I think to call you it on correct. A hard screen.
That is a touchy foul. However, he did fucking foul him. Watching it live, you could tell it was a bit of a moving screen. And, you know,
yeah, it just seems like the kind of thing they tend to let go.
It's tough. Yes, sometimes they do. This one, it really should not have been let go.
Yes, and now I have seen Lowry's final shot. Congrats. Congrats to not practicing.
Congrats. I mean, I wouldn't practice that shot. That's not a shot I would practice because I don't think I would take that
That's
shot
true. That's true. Now, would you say, having watched this, that I'm only going by stats. It didn't seem like Klay and Steph had, like, incredible games for them.
Klay had a really good game. He shot very well from three-point land, and he shot three-pointers when they needed them, which was really, really good. And I did think Steph had a good game. I don't think he had the best game, but I think he had a really good game. What did he have? He had like 28, something like that.
He had 31. They both had points. It's just more like the shooting, the efficiency was not. Was really good, but I don't think either of them it would go down as like a great. You know, their high standards, it wouldn't go down as an incredible game for either one. Klay's true shooting is pretty high.
Yeah, Klay had a good game. Klay had a really good game. And Steph, I think, also had a good game. The thing that was tough was just they got choky in that like weird un-Warriors way at the end.
Right.
And then right at the very, like, and that little 9-0 run that they had that was just 3 3-pointers. It was like, okay, well, fuck, they won the game. But it just doesn't seem sustainable.
Right. I guess what I'm saying is it seems like Steph particularly has a little bit of potential ceiling left to go up. He didn't shoot particularly well. And so he's got a lot of games in his career that are like this, 10 for 23, 5 for 14 from three, and he scores 31 points and 8 rebounds, 7 assists. That's a very, very good game. So everybody would kill to have games like that. But the thing that might, like that, if I was a Warriors fan, I would pin my hopes on is he can give you a game that's more like a 14 for 23, where he scores 38, you know, like something just like a little bit tipped more towards being like an all time game. And that sort of is what you have kind of have to pin your hopes on, that he's in that ballpark more, for these last two games, as opposed to, some of his more average playoff games have been like, you know, in the 26-ish points range, which are fine when Durant's on the court as well. But I agree. I don't think that's why I still feel like the Raptors are going to win, just because now the Warriors are reduced to like their true weapons are the two guys. And it's just so much harder for them to find space for them when there's not another person.
They were giving Iguodala and Green miles and miles of space, and it was so hard to watch. And Draymond Green shot well. He shot well. He missed 2 for 4 from three, and they still didn't respect him. They didn't respect him at all, and I think it was the right move.
Yeah, and then the only thing that the Warriors can maybe, I don't think this is something you can depend on, but it's something they got against the Rockets, which is, can somebody like Sean Livingston come up with a 12-point game? You know, just once out of these last two, can Sean Livingston put up 12, and can like Iguodala put up 18 in the other game? You know what I mean? Some kind of like extra, that thing is that they've had throughout their whole dynasty. Yeah, they've had a lot of games like that in high leverage games where it's like, holy shit, how do they get, you know, like Quinn Cook,
Leandro Barbosa. Like,
yeah. So that's, now that is a very tenuous thing to hope happens, but in their favor, it's the last game in Oakland.
They won this game for Oracle.
Yeah, I would really hope that the home crowd just blows the roof off of the joint. You have to. It's the last game in that state. Like, you have to bring it as a crowd.
Yeah, there's no options there. There's no, you really need to make sure that they know that you're behind them. Win or lose, too. Because there's a good chance that they lose on Thursday. And if that team doesn't get the respect that they deserve from the fans there, it'll be a huge bummer.
I mean, that would be just So in the same way that, like, tonight, the Raptors fans' reaction, I think it is very interesting how there's a few things have lined up to, I think, that will, in the end, turn a lot of people's perceptions of Durant from being the snake to, I don't know, I feel it softening. I think this Raptors fan reaction is not going to, it's going to help in that direction.
Yeah, and the fact that he came back at all.
Yeah, when he absolutely did not have to.
No, he certainly didn't.
And the fact that, like, I know it's gross, but, like, footage of your Achilles rupturing is a great way for people not to be like, he's faking it.
Yeah, he's certainly not faking it.
So in that same way, I think that if the Golden State fans come out lackluster, like, if the Warriors lose, which they probably will, if they lose on your home court, it is your chance to give them thanks for this entire 5-year run, which is historic, and not necessarily over. So that's, again, another opportunity for a great heel turn on the Warriors fans' parts if they don't bring it. Or if like, Fred Van Vliet shatters his leg and the entire arena comes to a standing ovation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's yikes. Yikes. I mean, like, Fred Van Vliet has already lost a bone. He already lost a bone in this series.
Oh, gee. That's true. How about this? Kyle Lowry, both of his Achilles pop at the same time, and then accidentally the Warriors release the confetti from the ceiling.
Okay, yeah. All right. That's a doomsday scenario.
Kawhi Leonard, how was his game?
He had a quiet Kawhi game for the first half. And in the third quarter, he was bad. And then in the fourth quarter, it felt like he couldn't miss. So this was as close to the bad Kawhi game as you're going to get.
Right.
So he was not invisible, but he was very mild. He had a couple of really good defensive plays, but he also had 5 turnovers after a game when he had 0 turnovers. And people were like, he's amazing. And he is amazing. The level of control he had on the ball in this game was not as good.
Right. We had another sort of low ebb for a Siakam game.
Yes, Siakam did not play super well. He had a couple of really good offensive plays that were, you like, catch under the basket, score. But other than that, I don't think Siakam had a great game. I think Van Vliet had a kind of a poor game. He didn't do as well defending Curry this time as he did when he was in games 3 and 4.
Uh-huh.
But he did hit some big 3-pointers. So he didn't, you know, he wasn't completely gone.
Oh, by the way, I don't, like, fault Siakam for having variance in his game. It's only his third season. And
yeah,
he has not really had a heavy minutes load until this season. His first year, he played 15 minutes a game in only 50 games. And last year, he played 20 minutes a game. So this is his first year as a real, like, major factor. And he's expected to sort of be the second best player on their team.
Yeah.
You were talking about Van Vliet. What about Lowry?
I felt like Lowry had a weird game in that he was present on offense and he was passing really well, but he didn't score super well.
Yeah.
It was like he was fine. I think that from, you know, his efficiency numbers, he did really well, but he didn't feel like a force.
This is the game that first of all, this would be an incredible bookend to the Warriors dynasty if they come back and win this. And really a true, like, considering that Durant was not on the team that lost the 3-1 lead, a perfect redemption to that story.
Yes.
But if they do that, then this is the game that Toronto has to be killing themselves if they did that. They didn't grab.
Yes, they certainly would kill themselves for that. I do have to admit, Durant was on a team that lost 3-1 the year that the Warriors lost 3-1.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
So he's got some 3-1 magic in him. Don't forget about it.
That's right. In fact, if he hadn't done that, then the rest of this wouldn't have been possible. Like, all of these domino pieces would not have fallen this way.
That is so true. I mean, just think about it. If they had won that series, if Klay Thompson didn't get hot in game 6, all these what ifs.
Now, one thing you were talking about last episode was how you felt like, really, through the first 4 games of the series, that Golden State had really only been better than the Raptors in like one quarter, or like, you know, in very small spurts. Did this game change your perception of that?
It felt like there were runs back and forth in this game. And you know how in the other games it felt like Golden State would try to come back and they'd get closer and they wouldn't quite get there? It felt reversed in this one, where Golden State was up and they got up, but it never felt like they were closing the door on the Raptors. And then the Raptors took over and were like, okay, we are doing this. And in the fourth quarter, it felt like, oh my God, the crowd's going wild. Toronto's going to win this thing. And then Steph Curry and Klay Thompson hit 3 threes and we're going back to Oakland. I feel like this game, they did play well enough to be in the series. I also don't think that they were dominant. I think that they didn't, you know, they didn't win this game handily. Of course, they won by 1 point, but this was a game where they won it and they deserved to win it. And I feel like, you know, this one, I don't know, combined with all of it, I do feel like they put together a statement win for themselves.
Yeah. First of all, I'm also glad that they won, because in terms of the fun of discussing NBA games and the narratives around them, with Durant's injury, with the Raptors fans' reaction, with the last game in Oracle, I'm glad that they won, because if the Raptors had won, I really feel like a lot of that would have just been kind of shunted to the side for this Raptors celebration. And I think this kind of stuff will be fun to talk about for the next 3 days.
It's gonna be a good 3 days.
I mean, it's going to be a lot of good first takes and undisputed clips on my YouTube feed. Now, I want to read to you something that I just saw somebody screen captured from Instagram. I don't know if you know this Instagram account, Easy Money Sniper.
I have heard of that guy. He plays the basketball.
That's right. He just posted on his Instagram the following quote. Dub Nation gonna be loud as fuck for game 6. I'm hurting deep in my soul right now. I can't lie, but seeing my brothers get this win was like taking a shot of tequila. I got new life. LOL. Hashtag Dubs.
Love it.
There you go. That's Kevin Durant's post-game message on his Instagram. Yep.
Just pulled it up. And also, you know what my favorite thing about this is? Is you can very much tell from the background that it's not just a black background. He put his hand over the camera.
Oh, really?
Took a picture. Yeah, because like you can tell that there's like some artifacting and some like this is a picture that he took. You know how when you want to post a like a text thing on Instagram and you're like, oh, I could put, you know, do a, like a gradient background like they have, or I could just take a picture of my shorts. Just right next to it. And he very obviously did it. Once you go to his Instagram and take a look at it on your phone, you'll see it. It's very funny.
I think that's a good sign.
I think it's a great sign.
In terms of, yeah. It's a great challenge for Curry. Like, this is like a real career. He's got a Hall of Fame career. It doesn't matter. But this is a great opportunity for him to really like if he can pull this off and get and win this series, no question he's finals MVP. And like I'm sort of drunk with all of the narrative possibilities of the rest of this series.
Yeah. I think that it's just such a bummer that you can't get good enough internet to watch the game, you know, and all these narratives could fuel your rage and your happiness and all of your emotions and make you into the ultimate r/NBA god.
Yeah, this is a real almost like laboratory approach to appreciating the NBA, where I get to experience every single part of the finals except the actual game. Like all of the memes, all of the reactions, all of the live stats, all of the analytics. I just don't get to actually watch people play basketball.
Yeah. Yep. And who needs that? That's the worst part, right?
You know, oh, I don't think I told you, just a quick little diversion. I don't think I talked to you after I saw the my Super Rugby match that I watched Saturday here in Sydney.
No.
Well, I'm not going to go too into it because it's not a rugby podcast, but I will say that I went to see the Sydney New South Wales Waratahs play their only home match of this month and their last home match of the season. And this is the level of rugby, professional rugby in Australia, that's just below international play. So like above this is the World Cup. That's it. And I was pretty profoundly disappointed by the experience. Overall, the match itself was great. The pitch was great. The, you know, everything about the actual game was very, very good. But the actual experience of being a fan going to see the game, honestly, it felt like a class AA minor league baseball game. I've seen a couple of those in North Carolina, and it was about that level of like entertainment value around the sport itself.
Interesting.
So it was it was really disappointing. It was not even as well thought out as a Clippers game, my friend.
Whoa. Okay, all right.
And also very poorly attended. I've been reading that these Super Rugby teams are actually having some financial trouble. And I'll tell you one thing, that one reason why they're having financial trouble is this was not their home stadium. Apparently their home stadium is being like renovated or something. So it was a sort of a alternate home game for them. But I had money in my pocket to buy merch, and they had one stand of jerseys and other stuff that only had smalls and 4Xs left. And I would say I probably, about $150 of my money stayed in my pocket instead of them getting it. And there were like multiple families and kids that were, they would just want to go and buy like a $30 scarf, and they'd be like, there's no more scarves. So they're just leaving money on the table constantly. Oh,
that's rough.
So it was very interesting, having seen a couple Clippers and Lakers games this year, to go see this equivalent, where I was just like, man, these guys are similarly at or near the top of their sport, and the structure around them weirdly is not a lot better than when I've seen rugby matches in the US, which is very marginalized. Like, no one cares about rugby in the US, but here it's the sport. Now, to be fair, it's not rugby union, which is what I saw. It's not the people like rugby league a lot more here, but still, it's just weird for there to be like, the next level up is them playing international games for the country, and like they play a home match, and literally the bottom sections are maybe, like, I would say that stadium probably seats 30 or 40,000, and there are maybe 10, at most 10,000 people there.
Yeah. Wow. That's not a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, just, we should all be lucky that the NBA is in such good shape and that it's doing so well.
Yeah. In the time that we've been recording this podcast, Warriors GM Bob Myers said that it was an Achilles injury.
Well, so that's it for him.
That's it for him. Shouts out to KD. That's so hard, man. Fuck. I'm upset.
Now, I will say one thing about this series going to 6 and/or 7 games is Nick Nurse is a good coach, clearly. Like, he's a really good coach. He's got a good staff. But I would say that over the last couple of years, the staff that you don't want to have more shots at figuring out how to play against you is Kerr and his team. Yeah. So, you know, we have looked at so many little micro adjustments that they've made over the last couple years where it's like, oh, yeah. they started stunting this, or they started, you know, shifting here or switching early, or they all these little micro tactics that they've put in that, like, that is another thing as a Warriors fan, I think you could maybe put a little hope on, is that, like, the more time they get to figure out a team, the better they do.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a great game six.
It's going to be a great game six. Just, you know, everybody's going to be a little down about it because of the Achilles injury. And I hope that, yeah. I hope that we're able to see some good basketball, but you know, at this point it's like, this is important. Basketball is important, but you know, his long-term health is most important. That's, you know, we just don't know right now.
Now, this is what I would pitch for Kevin Durant is go ask if he can sing the national anthem.
That's it. That's got to be it.
Bump whoever's booked and just see if he can do it and just really get the crowd going. Or yeah. Actually, I've got a better idea. Bump who's going to sing the Canadian one.
Did you see at the game today, they had no singer for the Canadian national anthem. They had the crowd sing most of it. They had like the guy.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, it was kind of cute. And then they booed Kevin Durant, or they cheered him getting injured. So take that.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that Canadians have this reputation for being like super friendly. And I've toured through Canada, and I will say that it's a very passive aggressive friendliness in a lot of cases.
I mean, just the same as in the upper parts of like Minnesota, and you know, I mean, cold people, they're passive aggressive.
Yes. That's the tourist board slogan.
Yes.
Well, cool, man. I think I will see if I can. I, you know what, I'm sorry, but I'm going to probably have to go to some illegal resource to watch game six.
Like I said,
that's the box I've been put in.
We're going to have to get that siren back on just to put you back in podcast jail. I gotta know while I got you on the phone. How has the opening of the show been?
The opening show has been great. We have almost sold out all the shows. And the reaction from the fans has been really good. People love the show. I didn't know this, but the Sydney Opera House tends to have a little bit of a like stodgy reputation of being like it's for wealthy old white people, and yeah. So the Opera House is trying to do some counter programming to that, which is sort of why they brought our show there, and it's been received really well. Right now, there's a festival in Sydney called Vivid where they light up. Like all these different sites around the city light up their, like the bridges lit up, the top of the Opera House has these giant projections on it. So at night, it's just, there's all these like very bright projections going on all around the city. So it's super crowded. And so there's just been a lot of like people around and a lot of people coming to see the show. It's been really fun.
That's awesome. That's really great.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to a game six. I am looking forward to getting home eventually. It just happened to be that I didn't really time this, but this job happened to conflict with this. Also directly conflicting with my other podcast, Open Call, with the Tony Awards.
Oh yeah. So, did you and Eric put a show together?
We're going to do one today. So basically this whole Sydney Opera House bullshit is just like conflicting with everything.
I'm not going to tell anybody at the Sydney Opera House that you said it was bullshit. What's the Australian police siren sound? How do we get you to Australian podcast jail?
I haven't heard it yet. Maybe it's the British one. I don't know.
Ooh, I don't know. I guess
cool. I'll try to check in after the next one.
That sounds good. We'll be ready for you. Just wanted to give a quick shout out at the end of the podcast. My cousin Mike listens to the podcast, and he and his family are going through some stuff right now. And just wanted to send him some love. Thinking about you and Sarah and Wayne and Beth. So, much love.
Cool. Casey, do you have any comedy shows coming up?
Got two shows tomorrow night. Got a Bitchcoin and a Logan Everett show. I'm trying to juggle, see how I can make it happen. I got 8:30 for both shows, so I'm trying to go in the first half of one and the second half of another. And they're at different parts of the city, so I'm excited to see how I can make that work. And then Thursday night is the first ever Spicy with Nashville Hot. It's going to be some spicy comedy, two spicy boys making some improv comedy for you. So that'll be a good show. We're excited to have it at 8 p.m. at the Moving Arts Theater.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, have fun talking about the Tonys. Catch you next time.
Yeah, we'll see you after game six.
Bye.
Bye.
I have...